Don't settle for mediocrity. Don't settle for a mediocre life. Don't settle for mediocre accomplishments. Don't settle for a mediocre you. Our lives are the result of decisions and choices we make each and every day. Every day is a chance to decide our fate. Every day is a chance to make decisions of passion and excellence, or decisions of complacent mediocrity.
You don't have to settle for the mediocre. Do you know why? Because you have the power to make the decision to live a life of excellence. We make the decision to either pursue life in a mediocre way or to rise to the occasion, to work hard, and to make our dreams a reality. Every one of us can just sleepily live life half throttle, being content to drag ourselves through life one lazy, uneventful day at a time. Or we can passionately discover success by vigorously evaluating and improving our life, day by day, week by week, year by year.
It's your life. It's your call. You decide. You alone hold the key to living a life of pitiful mediocrity or of fulfilling accomplishment. Let's explore how to deal mediocrity a lethal, below-the-belt blow, and in so doing, put ourselves in a better position for discovering personal success.
We make many choices every day, one after the other after the other. All those choices put together equal our lives. The quality of our life doesn't just appear like magic. The magic lies in making good choices. But not only that, it's in realizing that we have the power to shape what our lives become. Will they be full of passion, enthusiasm, and joy, in spite of the bad stuff that comes our way? Will we take advantage of opportunities and progress, even if our means and finances are limited? Look at your life. Your choices make it what it is. That's a pretty amazing concept, but it's true. Go ahead, admit it. You have chosen to be who you are and live as you live. You determine how circumstances affect you. We all need to admit that what we're doing with our lives is our choice. This is, admittedly, a difficult concept to accept. Yet if you can embrace it, your life can change. You will begin to feel more empowered, less victimized, and as if you have more control of your life. Not a bad set of rewards for a simple admission of the truth. The admission I'm referring to is your choice of career or ministry and the accompanying hassles. You must admit that, despite the problems, limitations, obstacles, long hours, difficult coworkers, sacrifices you make, and all the rest, that you are doing what you are doing because you have made the choice to do so. Wait a minute, you might be saying, I'm not doing what I'm doing by choice, but because I have to. I know it can seem that way. Yet if you think through this issue, you'll begin to see that in reality, it really is your choice. When I suggest you admit that your job or your career or your success in life is your choice, I'm not saying that your problems are necessarily your fault or that you should even make other choices. What I am suggesting is that ultimately, all things considered, you've made the decision to do what you're doing. The problem is when you feel trapped and as if you aren't making your own choices, you feel like a victim. From time to time, most of us fall into the trap of believing that our circumstances are entirely beyond our control. Taking responsibility for your choices, however, takes you out of any poor me thinking and into an empowering, I'm in charge of my own life mindset. Contrary to popular opinion, God does not usually choose for us. We have to choose for ourselves, find His will for ourselves, seek Him diligently to know His will and to know what is best for us and others through our knowledge of His word and personal experience. This is why He put us here on earth. This is what we're here to learn and the major part of our training. How to make the right decisions through our personal contact with Him, our knowledge of His word and His will, and our love for Him and others. We must do what we know is right, and be willing to live and to die for what we know is the truth.
If we accept that our own choices have brought us to the point we're at today, then we won't blame others or our circumstances for difficulties and hardships. We'll take responsibility for our lives and quit excusing ourselves. To give a simple example, let's talk about something almost everyone does daily, watching TV or movies. Every hour you spend watching TV is an hour that you're not doing something else. Something that could be much more productive. Do you know that according to a recent survey, Americans now watch an average of 4 hours and 35 minutes of television every day? The average American television viewer is watching more than 151 hours of television per month. That's a lot of TV viewing. Do the math. If someone works 40 hours a week, the average American work week, that means they spend almost as much time watching television as working. Okay, let's say you don't watch that much television. But what about computer games, blogging and chatting online, surfing the internet? If you add up those hours, how do you fare? You've probably heard the concept that if you devote 1 hour a day to studying a topic, in 5 years, you'll be an expert. So what are you an expert at? What do you want to be an expert at? Does how you spend your time prove that? Do you read and study to become the professional that you want to become? If you don't, you have no one to blame but yourself for not being where you dream of being. If you're not reading and studying on your particular field of interest or what you're hoping to excel in, then I guarantee you're not reaching your full potential. A wise person once said, "The person who can read and doesn't is just as bad off as the person who can't read." You could take it a step further. The person who can read but doesn't is worse off than the person who can't read because they are choosing to let a valuable skill go to waste. Are you reaching your full potential? It's pretty simple. You live with yourself each and every day and will till the day you die. So what you do, how you live, how you decide to fulfill the mission, how you support yourself and make a living, everything in life is a reflection of the decisions you make. So think about your future carefully. Take responsibility now. Make decisions, decisions you will not regret, but more importantly, make decisions that will take you where you want to go.
It's easy to decide that you want to be successful in life and to set lofty goals for where you want to be in 3 to 5 years. But it's much more difficult to actually get there. Accomplishment is not just about thinking, wishing, hoping, or even planning. It's about doing. Planning is important, yes. But what good is a great plan and a tremendous destination if you never get started, persevere, and eventually reach that destination? It takes self-discipline to get to where you want to go and achieve what you want to achieve. You have to evaluate your life, your schedule, your off hours, and take a good hard look at what you are doing that is not productive, so you can change what needs to be changed and then commit to the self-discipline needed to reach your goals. You need to kick your own butt. What a concept. If you're serious about pursuing success, then that's a good starting place. Kick your own butt. What does this mean? It means that if you want to achieve success in life, in any endeavor, it's going to require self-discipline. Success is not synonymous with free time and taking life as it comes. If you want to reach your goals, to mature, to grow, to pursue a professional ministry or career, to be successful in the mission, to be responsible and make a difference, then it's up to you and only you. If you never seem to be reaching your goals, or worse, if you don't have any goals and are tired of people nagging you to do more with your time, if hearing it is driving you crazy, then do something about it. You can kick your own butt, and that way others don't have to kick it for you. Ultimately, this means you have to develop self-discipline. Self-discipline, a bad word? No. It might be a painful or uncomfortable word, but really it's a powerful word when you consider that discipline is the key to greatness and achieving success. I won't lie to you and say self-discipline is easy. It's not. It's hard. It's even grueling. But if you want to be all you can be, that's the price. Discipline derives from disciple. Disciple to a philosophy, disciple to a set of principles, disciple to a set of values, disciple to an overriding purpose, or to a goal or a person who represents that goal. In other words, if you are an effective manager of yourself, your discipline comes from within. It is a function of your independent will. You are a follower of your own deep values and their source, and you have the will, the integrity, to subordinate your feelings, your impulses, and your moods to those values. One of my favorite essays is The Common Denominator of Success, written by Albert E. M. Gray. He spent his life searching for the one denominator that all successful people share. He found it wasn't hard work, good luck, or even astute human relations, though those were all important. The one factor that seemed to transcend all the rest was putting first things first. He said, the successful person has the habit of doing the things failures don't like to do. Successful people don't like doing them either, necessarily. But their disliking is subordinated to the strength of their purpose. The good news is that the better you get at self-discipline, the easier it becomes. No one who achieves greatness does so without discipline. But when you discipline yourself to do the things you need to do when you need to do them, the day is going to come when you can do the things you want to do when you want to do them. It's also true that life is tough. But when you are tough on yourself, life will be infinitely easier on you. Discipline yourself today so that you can have a better life tomorrow. Success takes hard work and self-discipline. Success is rarely luck. Sure, there is the rare case when someone just happens to be at the right place at the right time and stumbles onto a gold mine. But for most of us, success comes as a result of self-discipline and methodical plodding, so that when an opportunity presents itself, we have the ability to reach out and grab a hold of it.
In his book, The Life God Blesses, Gordon McDonald tells a story about his experiences on the track team at the University of Colorado in the late 50s. In particular, he remembers the difficult workouts he did with a teammate named Bill. To this day, I have anguished memories of our workouts each Monday afternoon, says Gordon. When those Monday workouts ended, I would stagger in exhaustion to the locker room. But Bill was different. When he was finished, he would rest on the grass near the track. But after about 20 minutes, while Gordon showered, Bill repeated the entire workout. Bill didn't consider himself to be an exceptional athlete in college. I was not a great athlete, observed Bill. But I had a bag of tricks theory. That is, there is no one big move you can make in your training or in competition, but there are thousands of little things you can do. Bill might not have made a great impact during his college years, but his discipline and desire paid off over time. Through disciplined effort and continual improvement, the unspectacular college athlete who had worked out with Gordon McDonald became the world-famous athlete Bill Toomey, the decathlete inducted into the Olympic Hall of Fame in 1984. What elevated Bill to such high accomplishments was his discipline. Gordon McDonald's insight says it all. The difference between the two of us began on Monday afternoons during workout. He was unafraid of discipline and did the maximum. I was afraid of discipline, did the minimum.
There is a thought that sums up the impact of habits. People don't decide their future. They decide their habits, and their habits decide their future. So, okay, think about how many times you made a conscious decision to decide your future. Next, think about how many times you made a conscious decision to decide your habits. Once you've thought about this, note how many times you came to the realization that your habits instead had decided you. Be honest. And how many times did you discover that instead of you controlling a habit, it was controlling you? The dictionary defines habits as an acquired pattern of action that is so automatic it's difficult to break.
Fact is that our daily life is made up of habit and routine, which can help us greatly to be successful and accomplish our life's goals, provided those habits are good ones. Positive habits are a great asset. Negative habits, however, are like a black hole, sucking up productive, innovative, and lucrative assets in our life. We need to learn how to tell if a habit is positive or negative, and have a process for dealing with negative habits to replace them with positive ones. Here's a humorous account of how habits can become so ingrained in our life that they control our actions, sometimes without our noticing it.
Tiring of the drive from the airport to his country place, a man equipped his plane with pontoons so he could land on the lake directly in front of his cottage. On the next trip, he made his approach down the runway, as usual. Alarmed, his wife cried out, "Are you crazy? You can't land this plane here without the wheels." The startled husband abruptly yanked up the nose of the aircraft and narrowly averted certain disaster. Continuing, he landed the plane on the lake without any mishap. As he sat there, visibly shaken, he said to his wife, "I don't know what got into me. That's the stupidest thing I've ever done. And with that, he opened the door, stepping out, falling into the water.
Well, that's funny, but it does illustrate how we all have habits, plenty of them. The question is, are they good habits or bad habits? When dealing with a mathematical problem, you simply follow the formula. Having predetermined formulas helps the process of resolving problems. Can you imagine trying to figure out a mathematical problem if there were no formulas to follow? What we need then is a formula to follow for crushing the bad habits that keep us bound to mediocrity and prevent us from skyrocketing to success. I have a pretty good formula for this. Let's call this the progress formula, because it not only can help you when you are evaluating your habits, but more importantly, it can help you formulate a plan and strategy for progress. The elements of this formula are desire, believe you can, examine your surroundings, expose your excuses, create a plan, and monitor how your plans are going. Let's talk about these things.
Desire. Do you desire some change in your life? If so, how bad do you want the change? The wanting it is the easy part. The question is, how bad do you want it? That's the tough part. Do you truly want it enough that you are willing to change your life to accelerate your success? Do you want it bad enough to ditch your negative habits and replace them with positive ones? Do you want it bad enough to sacrifice whatever is working against the particular change and progress that you desire? A helpful tip is to imagine yourself where you want to be. Imagine how you would feel if you reached that goal. Then ask yourself, how much am I willing to pay to get there? Recently, someone explained to me an interesting way in which a life coach counseled his client who was overweight. He asked her questions such as, how do you feel when you put on your clothes that are too small? I feel like a cow, she replied. Building on that, he asked other questions that took the client back to her feelings of dissatisfaction with her physical appearance. And then he said, put all those negative feelings and emotions on one side of a weight scale. And on the other side, put all the sacrifice and hard work that you'd have to commit to in order to change your present situation. He took her through the steps of change that were needed and the work involved in getting to where she wanted to be. At last he asked, how much are you willing to sacrifice and how hard are you willing to work to be the new you? The result? She considered the cost, made the commitment, changed her daily schedule, reorganized her life, and paid the price to change her habits. And the happy ending is that she is now where she wanted to be. She dropped the excess weight, she reached her goals, she won, and her life is better as a result. The secret? She truly desired the change. Her desire was not superficial. She was willing to do the work and make the sacrifice, and she committed to a plan. Many people want to change any number of bad habits, but they don't want the change bad enough to do the hard work to get there. Thus, their desire is only superficial and ineffective. Ask yourself, how much do I desire the results of the change I seek, and am I willing to pay the price to get it? If the answer is yes, then you're well on your way to reaching your desired destination. Here's a key promise that will increase your faith for personal progress. Absolutely any negative thought pattern, any previously entrenched lifelong bad habit can be broken through the power of the keys. Call on their power to vanquish the old and negative and create the new and positive.
Believe that you can change. You might desire the change and feel that you are willing to pay the full price for that change, but deep in your heart, you might be wondering if you can actually do it. You might feel that others can, but you can't, even though you want it with all your heart. Or maybe you feel you don't have the talent, the time, the physical strength, or the endurance to change. Belief is an amazing thing. As the Bible says, "For as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he." Another verse reads, "The spirit of a man will sustain his infirmity." Those two Bible verses show us that the human will is a very powerful force in our lives. Chances are, if you believe you will fail, you will fail. If you believe you will succeed, you will succeed. You have to will yourself to change. You have to believe you can do it. The human soul is wonderfully and fearfully made and can survive and change in even the most adverse situations. The deciding factor is most often the human will and faith. If you are having a hard time believing you can change, Adopt a positive, full of faith attitude, even if you don't feel it. Start saying positive, change-reinforcing statements such as, I can change. I will change. I can do it is a very powerful statement. Adopt an I can attitude.
Evaluate your surroundings. Many times the will to change is not enough to complete the change process. You have to honestly and practically look at your surroundings and identify the things you are doing on a day-to-day basis that are working against the progress you seek or that reinforce your negative habit. Let's say you decide that you want to start getting up 1 hour earlier in the morning for extra time of spiritual refilling, as well as to make progress in an area you're personally focusing on and working towards. You set your alarm to try to get up early, only to find your efforts thwarted. Well, this would be a good time to look at your surroundings. Maybe you need to put your alarm on the other side of the room, so you have to physically get out of bed to turn it off, and then make a commitment not to get back into your bed. On top of that, when you do get up, you might need to go into a brightly lit room rather than staying in your cozy, dimly lit bedroom in order to tell your body that you're not sleeping, you are up and starting your day. You will find that with every habit you are trying to create or break, there are certain physical things that work for or against you. You need to find out what those are and change them, or it will be frustrating and much slower for you to make the change. This exercise will require that you think out of the box. Maybe there is something that you never thought of doing that would help you greatly. Or maybe there is something you do that you really enjoy, but you realize that to accommodate the progress you are working toward, you need to change the time at which you do it. So be open-minded. Change what needs to be changed, and then keep at it. It takes time to construct new positive habits.
Expose your excuses. You will need to take an honest look at yourself and the excuses you have been using up till now to protect your negative habit. The most important thing is to be honest with yourself. See what excuses come to mind, write those down, and then formulate a counterattack. If your excuse for not getting up early is that you went to sleep late, then formulate your counterattack of a reasonable cutoff time at night so you can get to bed earlier. If your excuse is you like your late night internet browsing, formulate a counterattack to remind yourself of what you will lose the next morning by not going to sleep on time. For every excuse, have a counterattack ready and keep it handy so as to remind yourself of it often. Memorize this concept. Great achievers create goals. Underachievers create excuses. Maybe you think this doesn't apply to you or that you are disadvantaged because your circumstances are difficult. However, there have been countless successful people who triumphed over obstacles, handicaps, or difficulties. Take this story, for example.
This is a story about a woman who truly understands what it means to prepare for success. The woman's name is Laura Sloat, and she is the senior partner of a New York money management firm that oversees $500 million in assets. Sloat is phenomenally successful, by the way. During 1 5-year span, the private account she managed averaged returns of 25% or more a year. Needless to say, in Sloat's line of work, her job is information intensive. She has to constantly monitor international markets. She must assess scores of financial reports every week, and she must stay on top of even the smallest global buying trends. Sloat's success comes as no surprise to people who know her, for according to her friends and family, she has been preparing herself for success ever since she was a little girl. Even as a child, Sloat listened to tapes, attended seminars, and counseled with mentors. Since age 6, she has sought out every piece of new technology that could help her prepare herself for success. Amazingly, the only thing she did not do was read. In fact, to this day, Laura Sloat does not read, despite the fact that information is the lifeblood of her business. That's not to say that Laura Sloat is undisciplined or unprepared. On the contrary, Laura Sloat is a fountain of information on just about any subject you can think of. But as unlikely as it may seem, she didn't get that information through reading. You see, Laura Sloat has been blind since the age of 6.
Next, you need to create a plan. Plan your work, work your plan. You need to document your goals and how you're going to get there. A plan is not a plan unless it is written down. And I might add, a plan is not an effective plan unless it is reviewed often. You might have the most organized plan in the world, but if it is tucked away, never to be seen again, then it was nothing more than a waste of time. Often we use the excuse that we don't have the time to stop and write down our plan, or to go back to our plan and monitor our progress. But if we don't write it down, then we're not really planning. We only think we're planning. It's too easy to forget or readjust or compromise a plan in our head if it's not formulated well and on paper. Or worse yet, when we don't write our plan down, we aren't taking the time and brain power needed to come up with a good plan. So our plan will be mediocre, and our follow-through even worse. When making your plan, remember to be realistic, and don't get discouraged. To once again cite the fitness example, say your goal is to lose 10 kilos. So you decide to go on a binge diet and lose 10 kilos in 1 month. You start your day with coffee. For lunch, you eat cabbage soup. And dinner, you just eat an apple. This is an example of an unrealistic plan. Not only is this unhealthy, but worse yet, you'll yo-yo back to your original weight and probably more over time. Instead of this, try following a more realistic plan. For 6 months, substitute your regular lunch with a meal of lean protein, whole grain starch, and some fruit or salad. On top of that, commit to power walking for an additional 30 minutes, 3 to 4 times a week. Remember, destroy those excuses. If your reply to the above plan is, "I look forward to my macaroni and cheese lunch and could never substitute it for that menu," expose that excuse and come up with a counterattack. Here's one way you could deal with this excuse. If you like reading a certain genre of books, be sure to have a book on hand and go outside or sit somewhere relaxing and read after lunch so that you end up looking forward to reading as opposed to eating lunch. The reason it's so important to be realistic is that if you're unrealistic, you'll get discouraged too soon. You'll quit and never reach your goal. It's better to be realistic and get there gradually rather than never get there at all. And lastly, don't get discouraged. We all have times when we slip or have a bad day. This is not a problem. In fact, you need to expect that there will be some slips and actually plan for those so that when they happen, you're not overwhelmed. Rather, you feel that it was all part of the plan. Another important element of your plan is to actively plan to have some downtime or special events. Take the above example. While your plan calls for you to substitute your regular lunch for a low-fat meal, once or twice a week you need to set aside your normal routine and enjoy a lunch of your choice. What this does is, 1, it helps you to feel like you, not your plan, are in charge of your life. And 2, you'll have more willpower to stick to your plan for the rest of the week when you have a little break from the rules of your plan.
Last but not least, monitor your progress. Assess your progress. Regularly evaluate your plan to see if it is working for you. If not, change it. Your plan is a tool for progress. If you find that your original plan was unrealistic, adjust it. If you were too lenient, tighten it. With every plan you make in life, try to have it broken down into 3 categories. 1, long-term goals, to be reached within 3 to 5 years. 2, short-term goals, to be reached within 6 months to a year. And 3, immediate goals, to be reached within 30 days. Using the earlier fitness example, you could specify your goals as follows. Long-term goal, reach my ideal weight and become more fit overall with more muscle tone and definition. Short-term goal, I will lose 10 kilos over the next year, which is less than 1 kilo a month, and I will add a weightlifting plan to my current exercise routine. Immediate goals, I will monitor my calorie intake, I will drink more water, I will exercise 5 times a week, and I will cut down on snacks, alcohol, and sugar in my coffee. Having each plan broken down into long-term, short-term, and immediate goals gives you structure to your plan and life. This also gives you a yardstick by which you measure your progress. If your plans are too vague, you will not know how to properly gauge your progress. But if you have your goals broken down into these 3 segments, your progress will be easily noticeable. Make it a habit in your life to revisit each of your plans every month. Measure your progress according to last month's immediate goals, adjust your plan, create new immediate goals, and then keep going. If you are faithful to do this each month of every year, you will see tremendous progress in your life, and you will be actively tearing down mediocrity.
One of the most common excuses is, "I don't have time." We've all said that on numerous occasions, and at first glance, this might seem like a solid excuse, and it's true you might be busy. Perhaps the best way to illustrate this point is with this story that hits the nail on the head.
Before becoming a full-time writer, Grisham was a lawyer. Like most successful lawyers, he put in long hours at the office, often 60 hours a week, sometimes 80. Despite his grueling schedule, Grisham wanted more than anything to write a novel. However, Grisham had countless ready-made excuses as to why he could not write a book. Excuses like the fact that he had no creative writing experience, that he had obligations to his wife and two kids, that he didn't have time because he was working 10-hour days, 6 days a week, that he was under incredible stress at work. But Grisham knew that when all was said and done, he had a choice. He could either find reasons to write a novel, or he could find reasons not to write a novel and then justify himself why he couldn't do it. Fortunately for his readers and his family, Grisham chose to find reasons to write his first novel. He wrote his first book, A Time to Kill, by making one simple adjustment in his life. He changed his morning habits. He started getting up at 5 a.m. and working on his novel. In effect, he didn't have enough time in his day to write, so he made the time by getting up a couple hours earlier each day. Less than 1 year later, Grisham had a completed manuscript to send to publishers. Only one problem. The first publisher said thanks, but no thanks. So did the second, and the third, and the fourth, and so on. But Grisham was determined to see his book in print, so he kept submitting his book until finally, publisher number 26 said yes. The publisher had so little faith in the book that only 5,000 copies were printed. And at the time, it seemed like 4,000 too many. The book was a flop. So Grisham made another choice. He decided to market the book himself. He bought 1,000 copies and then made it a habit to spend his weekends visiting every bookstore, library, and garden club meeting within driving distance of his home. It took months before his habit of giving talks and signing books on weekends began to pay off. Slowly, over time, readers started recommending the book to friends. Word of mouth kept building and building until finally, after nearly a year's worth of weekend personal appearances, John Grisham's first novel, A Time to Kill, exploded into the bestsellers list, where it stayed for 100 weeks. To date, there are more than 10 million copies of Grisham's first novel in print. This story emphasizes the importance of developing productive habits. Grisham was able to accomplish what he did because he changed his habits. He did what he had to do to turn his dream into a reality. He understood that he had to make some adjustments to his normal routines if he were serious about writing a novel. So he did just that by changing his sleep habits. Can you see how Grisham's new habit of getting up at 5 a.m., let's say 2 hours earlier than normal, allowed him to accomplish a lifelong dream? Just look at how developing a habit of adding 2 productive hours to a day can make a world of difference. Over the span of a year, you would add 15 work weeks, or almost 4 months, a productive time to each and every year of your life. Even if you only woke up 30 minutes earlier each day, you could add a month of 40-hour weeks to your year. Isn't it astounding that developing a habit as simple as getting up a little earlier each day could have such a profound effect on your life?
This story clearly shows that enough willpower and self-discipline will really pay off over time. This can happen in your life as well. When it comes to managing your time, think of it like this. If you manage your habits well, your time management will follow. If you have a negative habit of frittering away your time away at night surfing the net or clocking in a lot of time watching TV or movies or checking out YouTube, you are building a mediocre life because that robs you from doing something more productive with your time, such as studying to broaden your mind or strengthening your career or deepening your relationship with the Lord.
If you take the time to apply the progress formula to your life, you will know what to do each time a non-productive hole appears in your day, and you will know how to fill it and what to fill it with because you have a plan.
Success requires self-discipline and buckling down to the hard work of analyzing your habits and surroundings and evaluating if they're working for or against you. Then you must follow the progress formula to change what needs to be changed and improve what's already working so that it works even better. Anything that's worth something costs something. If it's worth a lot, it usually costs a lot. You get what you pay for. If you're willing to pay the high price of a disciplined life, of sticking to your plan, and methodically and consistently hammering away at your goals, you will reach them. And your life, accomplishments, and participation in the mission will have great value because you're not settling for mediocrity. Don't be a mediocre Christian. Proudly stand up for the faith and give everyone you meet the opportunity to know Jesus in a more personal way. Let it be said of you that you are anything but a mediocre person and Christian.